This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.
Hi, and welcome to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, and I have a very special guest today. We're going to be talking about mystery novels, about unsolved mysteries. It's going to be really cool. But first, I'd like to make a quick announcement. If you have a story about authenticity to tell, if you have dared to be authentic in your life or know someone who has, I'm still looking for guests for my radio show. I'm always looking for guests. So give me a call at 954-243-7297, or you can contact me through my website, lifecoachmari.com. That's lifecoachmari.com. So I'd like to introduce my guest now. His name is Willoughby Hundley, and he writes mystery novels based on his experiences as a medical examiner. Willoughby graduated from VCU Medical School and is certified in both family medicine and emergency medicine. He works in the community hospital near his hometown where he lives with his wife. Welcome to the show, Willoughby.
Oh, thank you, Mari. It's good to be
it's
here.
It's good to have you here today.
My most recent book was just put out about 6 months ago. It's called Evil Wake. And all of my books are based on actual experiences as a county part-time medical examiner for 30 years. I've seen a lot of different presentations with death, and they seem too interesting not to share with everyone.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. I've always been fascinated by that anyway. So tell us a little bit about how you decided that you would go ahead and take these fascinating, interesting facts and create novels out of them.
This originated from my practice as a family physician. I had a family that had a death in their family. The parents were patients of mine, and the son died. It was somewhat mysterious. It was written off as a suicide, but there were a lot of elements about his disruptive marriage and the financial things. There were a lot of things about it, and it worried them a lot. They talked about it a lot when they came in for just their routine visits and stuff. They said, you know, they still had this unsettled feeling, and that the police didn't do this and didn't do that. And the more details I heard on this, I thought, oh, my God, this sounds like a story. So that was the basis of putting Get Together Ashes of Deception, which was the first medical examiner story that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
These are all fiction. I'm sorry. These are all fiction. They do have basis in medical examiner cases, but that one was probably about 80% fiction. I mean, 80% reality. The ending, I took liberties with the ending because I know how it ended for them, and I made it more of a what-if ending.
Right. Okay. Just out of curiosity, did they ever find out what happened? Did they ever have closure on that?
Oddly enough, they didn't reopen it or anything. It was billed as a suicide. And the book came out. The mother was actually dying when the book came out, and she never knew that it came out. She knew it was being published. The surviving father, he was in ill health, but his daughter was also a patient of mine, and she told me how much he enjoyed the book. And that he couldn't read a lot by himself, so she would read it to him, and he would stop her in places and would say, "Read that back again." And she'd read it back, and he would nod like, you know, yeah, that's it, that's right. So that made me feel really good.
Yeah, that's awesome. How did it feel as you were writing? This was your first book ever, is that correct?
Well, I wrote a book about medical school in the 80s. It was called M81. Which was it started out kind of like a diary. I was just trying to remember some of the things prominent professors had said in some of the stories I heard around the medical school, I thought it would be good to put into a novel. And it came more than just a diary. It sort of it takes you through the last 2 years of medical school. So that was M81.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, that's all I was going to write. I wrote that and says, well, that's my memoirs from medical school, somewhat fictionalized.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I heard this, I says, well, I got to write this story. And the more I got into it and started developing characters, there were mysterious deaths that sort of just fit in and said, well, this goes right here. And they just lined up. The story kind of wrote itself once I got going. Anyway, I sort of enjoyed that. So I went on with the other two books. The others are Elemental Danger, and the most recent one is Evil Wake.
That's fantastic. I'm a writer as well, and I know what you mean about that. It just takes, to me, it almost takes it takes off by itself, like you say. It just begins to develop, and before you know it, it's going off. Sometimes for me, it goes off on a tangent I wasn't even expecting. So that's pretty cool. So tell us about your second book a little bit, and then we'll talk about the third. Yeah.
Okay. The second medical examiner book was Elemental Danger. Again, mysterious cases. That one begins on when they found skeletal remains on a beach at the lake. I live in a lake community in Southern Virginia. They found these skeletal remains, and they were scattered over the beach, and we were out there picking them up, and it was like, how did this body get here and kind of scattered out over the beach like that? And anyway, it got me to thinking. They have a uranium ore deposit in Virginia that's like the second largest in the world, and they have a ban in Virginia against uranium mining because of their concerns over the safety and environmental and other things. And so this was tied in closely with the issue with the uranium mining, and I won't give away much more than that.
Okay. And that's the one with the body that was found all over the beach, and that's the true part, right?
Yes. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Description of that, and I don't know that one was ever solved.
Wow. I mean, that doesn't sound like it's real. That sounds more like fiction, you know, would be all over the beach. Wow. That's crazy.
But it played into that, and I mixed in some other things with it that were based on fact as well. People were stealing copper from construction sites. Mm-hmm. They were stealing wires because they were selling the copper. And someone got electrocuted because they grabbed a live wire. And sort of, you know, that it wasn't obvious as that what had happened initially. A lot of these things, you don't know when you're at the scene. You really don't know how it's going to play out till you get back to toxicologies, till the police have done their investigation, and these things start falling into place. So it's kind of interesting to see that happen.
Right, and you did mention to me that there's a lot of moving parts here. There's a lot of, it just doesn't all evolve by itself or with one person. There's a lot of different people doing different tasks that make, you know, like brings all these facts together. Is that not true?
Yes, and in the country, I won't say a lot of crimes are solved by word of mouth, but if you look at all the stuff on TV, you know, a crime happens, he says, well, get the security cameras or get this footage and all that. Well, there's not that stuff around here in the country. There's no security cameras. They might have one at the ATM machine, but that's about it. So this is, you sort of have to dig for clues.
Yeah.
We don't have a CSI team that comes in and collects DNA at the scenes and all of that. We get what we need, and they package it up, but it all gets sent to Richmond.
I see. Okay. Wow, that's really interesting. So what role did authenticity play, do you think, in your writing?
Well, of course, the first one, as I was saying, that it was a real situation. and there were a lot of unresolved elements in the family and stuff. So that I had a lot of information that maybe the police didn't even have, because I had talked to the family, the sister, the father, the mother. I talked to them intermittently, basically for years. So I had a lot of information, and that was authentic. And yes, it was a fictitious story, but it had a lot of authentic elements to it. And the second one, of course, with the uranium mining and stuff, I mean, that was real. And they actually drilled, I think, 12 exploratory mines, supposedly.
Wow.
Exploratory. I mean, I don't know what that means, but I know what it could mean.
Yeah, exactly.
And this most recent one, there's stories in the community. There's always mysterious death stories, and one had happened, you know, 50 years ago, and one had happened maybe 15 or 20 years ago, and they led to be embellished and modernized and made into a story. There was enough interesting elements in them.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of made itself into another story.
Right. I like the way you say made itself.
Yeah. The character flow is similar. We have some of the same characters in all of them, although there's probably a new prominent character in each one that plays a part in the investigation. So that that helps some.
Fantastic. So what do you think is the main message that you want to bring to the listener today?
Well, the message with the local medical examiner's role and stuff is that it's not a hero. It's not a detective hero that solves the case. There's a lot of pieces that come together, especially in a rural area. And you sort of have to, it's an appreciation of all the aspects that come together. The local police, the medical examiner, even people you know in the community. When I was practicing, I would hear things from patients that would come in. I could hear pieces, and sometimes they related to crimes. And sometimes it didn't. Sometimes they would just talk about, oh, did you hear about so-and-so? You know, I knew him back in high school. So they feed into it. That's the authenticity of it.
Right. No, that's really great. And, you know, I liked the part about that, you know, in the books you make it known that there's this team effort. And that part is real, even though the scenario or the characters are fictional because you created them. The jobs that they do and the fact that they work as a team to get this done, that's real. And so you're honoring, you know, the medical examiner, you know, which was your role, and all the other roles, whether it's the police officer or the lab people, right? You're honoring them in your book as well. So even though these are books of fiction, I believe that I can feel that you just want to honor these people and show, hey, this is the job that these people do, and this is how things get solved, even if they don't always get solved, right?
That's right. You say that, and they do appreciate this. I'm friends with some of the people that man the 911 center locally, and they're some of the first. When they hear books coming out, they sometimes see it in Facebook or something like that. They'll call me and tell me to sign one and bring it to them. I mean, they're on the spot. They like reading them. And I would think for a 911 call, they get a 911 call, you go out, they know it's a death scene or something like that, and that may be all they hear about it. But then to be able to read in the book how it developed, and it was, I think that's satisfying to them too. It makes them feel like their job is more complete, and more full.
Exactly.
The character in the book,
the
main character, I guess, is somewhat modeled after me, Dr. Hardy. And I have gone to the sheriff's office for various reasons and walk in the door, and people call me Dr. Hardy when I come in. So I know they're reading the books.
That's fantastic. So are you going to play yourself when they make it into a movie?
I'll probably be too old if they ever make a movie. I don't think
they
like all. I think Quincy was probably the oldest Emmy I've seen.
Yeah, that is true. They don't like older people in Hollywood, right? Everybody has to stay young forever.
But the young people don't know what they're doing. A lot of the young people don't have the experience yet. They're still feeling the ropes. And sometimes that's good because they don't know why they can't do something. But a lot of times experience does play into it.
Absolutely. Very good. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Okay.
Hello, it's Doc Indy here, your conscious life coach for women. As women, we're always taking care of everyone else, oftentimes to our own neglect. But I'm here to help you change that. I want you to go to mindfulhealthforwomen.com, that's with the number 4, so that you can book your free 30-minute coaching session, and we'll begin to address your mental, physical, and spiritual health. I look forward to speaking with you.
Are you a diva struggling with stress from your career or juggling the responsibilities of everyday life? You're invited to Renew Your Life Now. Join Lynn Owens in a transformational program and take your life back. Restore balance, boundaries, and nurturing into your life now. Go to allowspacenow.com and click on the Start Here tab or email Lynn at allowspacenow.com. That's Lynn at allowspacenow.com.
Welcome back to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. If you want to call in and have a question, the number is 929-477-3869. That's 929-477-3869. And Willoughby, let's talk about your newest book that just came out. Tell us a little bit about where you got the idea for that one. What was the crime there?
Well, as I was saying, there was an old case, probably 50 years ago, that people talk about. Of some brothers that lived together, and they were brutally murdered, and they didn't trust banks. They stored their money in, like, jars they buried in the yard. Another story was that they had a safe in their house. The money was never found, and they never solved how they got murdered. And I worked that in as a cold case that the detective was working on along with the new thing. The new case in this one was some mysterious deaths that became linked to be a serial killer. And some of the difficulty in linking it was that the murders were in different states. Where we live in Virginia is 10 miles from the North Carolina line. And if a murder is in North Carolina, they don't necessarily communicate with Virginia authorities unless there's something that links them. So it may be hard to piece together mass murderers. The same thing happened with the D.C. sniper years back.
Mm-hmm.
The sniper murders were in Maryland and in D.C. and in Virginia. Well, they're three different jurisdictions, and for them to piece it together that it was the same person that was shooting people in three different things, it delayed a little bit for them figuring out what was going on. So same type of thing with this. It happened in Virginia and North Carolina, and I threw another state in there too, in Texas, and somehow linked them all up. But I don't want to give away a lot of the book, but...
I don't want you to give it away. I want you to give us enough so that we go buy it.
the way the detective sorted through it and put it together is I guess, a labor and intensive way to do it, which is what we do in the country, I guess. And, but he did come up with it, and anyway, it made a good story.
Well, the backstory, the fact that these brothers were murdered, how many were they, three or four?
It wasn't four. I think it was three. In the story, I think it's two in the story, but I think it was three in reality.
In reality, it was three, and that goes way. And so you actually worked this as a cold case, is that correct?
Yeah, well, the investigating detective in the book, Bruce Duffer, he was working it as a cold case. Mostly because it was a folklore thing, and everybody talked about it, and he was just working it as a cold case sort of on the side. But he did get a few breakthroughs, and it somehow linked to what was going on now.
Interesting. And so now, did that happen in reality, that they had tried to work this as a cold case, and it was a real case?
It's still a cold case.
Okay. And do they still work on cold cases that are that old? That's kind of my own question.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I
know
think
they,
so
the
either.
TV show, The Cold Case, they come in, but most of those are less than 20 years old. They're like some of them 10 years, some of them 5 years.
Right. Nothing this old. Very interesting. Okay. I mean, unless something were to come up, I guess, to show something. Okay, good. So let's talk about how one gets a hold of your books.
The only store that stocks them is in the local hospital where I work, which is in South Hill. They keep some in the gift shop. The rest are online. And actually,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to a bazaar this weekend in South Hill that I'll have a booth there selling them. But most of it's online.
Very cool. Okay, very good. So we go to Amazon.com, and you can also find, will it be on my website, lifecoachmari.com. That's lifecoachmari.com. He's already there, and it'll link right to the Amazon page where all his books are, so you can go buy them there. It's easy access for that. Okay, very good. What else would you like to say about your books and your writing to a listener?
Well, about the books, they are available as e-books, too, which are easy to download. And you can get those certainly from Amazon and the others. A place when I look for prices for books, because sometimes I can find them cheaper than I can get them from my publisher. But I've looked at a place called ABE Books. Occasionally they'll have them pretty inexpensive. So that's another site other than, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Okay, excellent.
About writing, I don't know. I've had some ideas about a sequel, another one in there. I haven't put pen to paper yet, but I am developing some ideas. So it's probably going to be another book at least. But it takes me a good year and a half to 2 years to write them since I'm working full time.
Very good. So are you the type of writer that outlines everything and you know from the beginning how it's going to end, or does this whole thing begin to develop as you write? Because I'm more that second kind of writer.
I'm more of the outline, although it does develop. I mean, you don't follow the outline. The outline's a guideline to show where in the book you get to certain things. You don't want to give away the killer in the first chapter. So
right.
I sort of have to have some restraint because I know, well, so-and-so's going to do it. Well, you got to hold that back. You got to wait and tell it when it needs to be. So, diagram it. But a lot of my diagram is so that it follows a time frame. Well, so if this happened in the spring and then something else doesn't happen until the fall, I've got to have it so that it flows like that. I don't like jumping time frames just to carry a thought, although you have to sometimes, but I like to follow the flow so I can describe the season and what things are going on in the community and stuff so that it all ties in.
Right. That makes perfect sense. And so do you always know who the killer is when you start writing?
No.
Okay.
I have a general idea how it comes about, but who actually does it know.
That's fascinating. So then the killer, you know, kind of develops himself as you write. That's the way I write as well. Some people know everything. I have a friend who does mystery books as well, murder mysteries, and she knows from the beginning in her outline, she already knows who the killer is, and she just has to fill in all the flesh, you know, flesh it out. But I like the fact that you don't know who the killer is. So the whole thing, even the killer, everything is developing as you're writing. That's pretty fascinating.
I sort of have what the conflict. Yeah, I have in my mind what the conflicts are, but who actually is the instrument of it, you know, that has to develop.
Right, exactly. So that's a lot of fun, is it not, for you as a writer?
Yes. Yes, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and for me as a reader, because I love reading murder mysteries, can't wait to get a hold of yours. That's a lot of fun, trying to, you know, figure it out with the writer along and seeing and going through the different turns and sometimes getting led down the wrong way on purpose. Do you do that a lot? Do you throw what they call in red herrings to lead people the wrong way?
I try to. The middle book, The Elemental Danger, I loved science and math when I was in school, and it's a lot of statistics and science and math in that one, which may be one of the reasons I wrote it, too. I liked throwing that stuff in there. Some people that don't like those have said it was too many numbers and too many this in it or too much science in it. I kind of like that, and it is in the story, so it's not the main thing. You don't have to do calculations to follow the story or anything, but it's sort of data that supports the findings that go along the way.
Oh, that sounds good. For people who, I'm not a math and science person by any degree. I'm more science, but not so much math. But if it's part of the mystery itself, as long as the mystery is developing and all that, it sounds like a lot of fun. It's been wonderful having you. Is there one last thing you'd like to say to a listener?
If you like reading, like you said, mysteries, murder mysteries, death mysteries, it's a good thing to look at for these books. The other thing on my writing is my books are fairly short. They're 160 to 200 pages, so they're easy for someone who's not into reading a 400-page book. They can read this. It's a good weekend read. It's a good beach read, things like that.
Great. Sounds great. What I love the most about these is that they're all based in fact. In other words, something happened, there were these circumstances, and you come along and then you create an entire book out of it. I find that one of the most fascinating things. I love things that are based in fact, even though there is a lot of fiction in it, it doesn't matter. That one from the beach is haunting me, so I'm going to have to go read that one first. So I just can't imagine being at the beach and finding this. Yeah. Well, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on with me today.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Very good. Have a wonderful rest of your day. And for the listener, thank you for being with us. Remember to come back to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. We're here bringing you authentic people who are doing things their authentic way. Thank you so much.
This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.